Listener-driven, never corporate-programmed. This is Independent Radio, CKUW 95.9 FM, Winnipeg.
The following is an encore presentation from CKUW's archives. Archives of your favorite local programming are available online at ckuw.ca/schedule.
Friday morning, folks, and if it's 11 a.m. and it's Friday morning and you're listening to CKUW, you're listening to the Hope Valley of No Fixed Address Show, where we always speak for those that can't speak for themselves and talk about issues on poverty, homelessness, and other social justice issues, and we're doing that again today. It is plus 7 out. It was cooler this morning. I went golfing yesterday, the first time in the year, but it was like minus 2 and it was really, really cold. I wish I'd gone golfing today. It's plus 7 and it's quite comfortable out there, but not getting that much warmer. Again, as I'll say every single show, is if you're going to Tim's, you're going to Robin's, you're going to Starbucks. If you can go to Starbucks and buy yourself a $4 cup of coffee, you can afford to buy two of them. So make sure that you, you know, care for those that are going to be sitting outside the door in Portage Avenue. And buy a second steep tea from Tim's or a second coffee, and make somebody's moment just a little bit brighter, because especially on days like this when it's cool, you know, people really need it. We can do so much for with so little effort. It takes very, very little to make a difference in somebody's life, even for a day. Today, we have a person I've been wanting to get on. It's like this, trying to get people on the show, finding the right timing and everything. And Cindy Foster, who's the executive director mm-hmm. of Regenesis Center for Recovery. And I wondered about the recovery aspect of things, and why you included that in the name of, first of all, why you included that in the name of your organization that you founded back in, we talked about it in 2019.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we came up with the name of Regenesis for our Center for Recovery mm-hmm. because it means rebirth. Mm-hmm. And we want to help foster a rebirth in people when they are in our program mm-hmm. and when they leave.
Okay. I did see that Regenesis, it comes from a Greek word, you know, meaning rebirth. Mm-hmm. And so that's a really applicable and appropriate name for sure. And it does grab attention.
Yes, even though sometimes it's hard to say.
Yeah. And people won't understand what it means. Yeah, as I had to look it up. as I do with every guest on the show, I'll ask you to just give a brief bio, what you care to share about your personal, about your life, and what drove you to this point, and what you've done before this to get you here, because it's really important that people understand the history of a person to some degree, you know, to understand why they are where they are. And, you know, my history is why I'm here. Yeah. And everybody has a reason. And I just like to explore that just a little.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I was born and raised in Manitoba, in Brandon in particular.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
I like Brandon.
Yeah, the bustling metropolis
yes.
of Brandon.
Yes.
Yeah. So born and raised in Brandon, did live abroad for a number of years, mm. came back to Manitoba, as so many people tend to do, gravitate mm-hmm. back toward Manitoba.
That happens to me too.
Right.
And why I came back, I'll never know, but I did.
I know. You come back and experience one winter and you're like, was this the best decision?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So I did my post-secondary education mm. at the University of Manitoba.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I had a double honors degree in psychology and political studies.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And after I graduated, I started working on the front lines in addiction here in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. And really being a member of the 2S LGBTQI plus community mm-hmm. or queer community,
yes,
if
yes.
you don't want to say the whole mouthful.
We were discussing this, the queer community. I think I'll use that, that terminology.
We can use that terminology. That's okay. Yeah. Being a member of the queer community myself and working on the front lines of addiction, really talking to people who are also a member of mm. the community and hearing their stories, mm. hearing their stories about, you know, their struggles with housing, their struggles
yes.
with access to mental mm. health supports, their struggles with addiction,
yep.
of course, and then their struggles with feeling safe in these spaces, right, mm. and accessing these mm-hmm. areas of care. And I started doing research and reaching out to community members and community organizations mm-hmm. and learned that there was really no dedicated addiction mm-hmm. recovery services for the queer community
okay.
here in Manitoba. So people would go to...
Sorry for...
No technology,
ahead.
Right?
Go ahead.
So people would go to, you know, the recovery services that are available, mm-hmm. and they do great things. It's just that there was nothing that was specifically developed for the specific needs of the mm-hmm. queer community, right? So, you know, folks would sometimes feel unsafe in these spaces, or sometimes yep. they would feel that they weren't relevant mm-hmm. in these spaces. And, you know, I wanted to work on providing that safe and relevant space for my community.
Yeah, that's really admirable. But it's, I can imagine the work that it took to do this mm-hmm. and get it started. And like, I've done a little bit of that bounding stuff, and it is difficult.
It's difficult.
And you run into roadblocks constantly, mm-hmm. and people don't understand what you're going through, especially if they don't necessarily understand what you're aiming for, what your goal is, in what your sector is, and mine as well. It's so difficult to just get the people to move and to get the funding that you need, and mm-hmm. you have to jump through hoops to do that, and the barriers that you face. I'm sure that was you've gone through that as many times as I have.
Oh, I'm not sure as many times you have. You've been at this for a while, but yeah, definitely. It's, you know, as you said, it's difficult to found and begin an organization, nonprofit organization in general.
Yes.
I began working on this just before the pandemic hit.
Okay.
So,
oh, wow. Right? Yes.
So we did run into some extra barriers mm-hmm. from that. And I mean, you know, starting a nonprofit, it's difficult work.
Yes.
It's difficult, like you say, to get the funding. It's difficult
and
to get people
so
on board.
And it takes so much time. At least a year, 2 years sometimes, sometimes 3 years.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
to get that status. And,
absolutely. Yeah. It's difficult. So many hoops to, mm-hmm. to jump through and barriers. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, what I've found and what the team that I work with has found is that for us in particular, there's still a lot of discrimination mm-hmm. for like funding and
very
recognition
yes.
for addictions recovery, and then also for the queer community. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of working against a double discrimination in the work that we do.
Yeah, and I would think that, but it's true, and I know that. You would think that in 2026 or 2025, 2026, governments and funding agencies should be well past that. You would think they would be well past that.
Mm-hmm.
One of my speakers at the next symposium is going to be Bradley West. I'm not sure you know Bradley West. He was the equity and diversity direct manager at the City of Winnipeg,
okay.
of the equity and diversity department, mm-hmm. which they cut out. Unbelievably, in 2025, in this day and age, they cut out equity and diversity. And he was a LGBTQ gentleman who actually founded the first, and he won't mind me saying this because I think he's been on the show, but he founded the Gay Pride Parade.
Right, yes.
That was him.
Yes.
And he's an encyclopedia. So I think I would like to tag team you up at the next symposium with Bradley and talk about these issues.
Oh, great.
And I've not, and to my my responsibility, I haven't really approached that in a strong enough way at the symposium. And this year I want to make a difference in that. And Bradley West is a strong, strong speaker on these issues, right? And I think you'd be a good tag team partner in that. And we'll talk about that later.
Oh, for sure.
Because it's necessary. I Greg Kilo has become a good friend of mine. He's the executive director of Bruce Oak.
Yeah.
And we're gonna have to have lunch again pretty soon. But he... again, they look after a lot of things, a lot of issues at Bruce Oak. And I love the way he presents. I love his programming over there. It's totally voluntary. If you don't like it, come back when you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're doing a woman's. But at the same time, where do the queer folks fit in?
Right?
Right?
They fit in with us.
Yeah, that's it, right?
Yeah.
That's probably the gap that you fill.
Yes.
Because, sure, they do awesome work. And I know people that have come out of Bruce Oak and have nothing but great things to say and are in a great state of recovery.
Yeah.
And they've helped them move on.
Absolutely.
And Greg is, Craig's one of those guys who really gets it, mm-hmm. you know, and him and his wife are a perfect pairing for what you do as well, because his wife is the CEO of CMHA Canada.
Okay.
He used to be CMHA Manitoba,
mm-hmm.
And he's of course the CEO of Bruce Oak.
Mm-hmm.
So they have the mental health and they have the addiction thing all in one family, right? And she's also on my program as well. But that's one of the thoughts that came to me. Okay, where are the queer people?
Yeah.
You know, where do they fit in here?
Yeah.
And I didn't ask them that yet, but I'll ask them next time at lunch.
There you go.
What are you doing about this? Right? Sure. You know, Ann Oak is going to be a really good program for the female, you know, sector, and as Bruce Oak is for the male sector, but getting left out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I know that the Bruce Oak Center, they do work with men, of course,
mm-hmm. yes.
like you said,
yes.
and gender diverse mm-hmm. adults as
yes.
well. And I think that's the same idea for the Ann Oak Center that's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. But of course, like, there's always need for specialized treatment, right?
For the queer sure.
community. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's kind of the gap that we're hoping to fill.
And again, when I was in Salvation Army, you and I talked about that before, but I saw the discrimination against LGBTQ.
Yeah.
And when I was there in those 14 and a half months, two people were murdered, and one of them was an LGBTQ person.
Mm-hmm.
And I did see the physical violence against LGBTQ people.
Yeah.
And, you know, we both know that Salvation Army tried to put in... I think they have five rooms on the second floor and develop a program. But it's fitting a square peg into a round hole,
mm-hmm.
yeah, if I can use that
mm-hmm.
metaphor. Because the people I know, Salvation Army, they do good work. They save lives.
Of course.
And all that kind of stuff. And I teach for them at Booth College now several times a year. But they also... don't have a clear understanding or kind of allow the thinking of the rights of LGBTQ people. I don't think it's in their DNA, you know, and it goes against the religious mandates that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate them trying, but it was never going to work. And I thought, what are you doing here? You know, this is not your purview. Is it? No, I don't think so. But thanks for trying. If that's too uncomfortable question, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, like you say...
I don't want to put you on the spot, obviously, but...
Yeah, I mean, the existing addiction services that we have here in Winnipeg and Manitoba in general, like you say, they try, right? They try. Mm-hmm. People's hearts are in the right places. We need specialized care. And
yes.
I mean, this isn't specific to LGBTQIA plus mm-hmm. community. This is specific to any diverse group,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
We need specific care for, you know, women in healthcare,
yes.
right? Like that kind of thing. And that's why having specialized programs such as Regenesis Center for Recovery mm-hmm. is so important, is like there is a huge unmet need.
Yes.
Right?
There is. And I always appreciate organizations that fill in gaps.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, when I'm on the community advisory board and when I'm actually looking at my own funding body, the people that fund my housing and all that, I always look for gaps. And I would look really kindly on your organization because there are so many times that people just slip through.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in this area. I have a friend who, I'm not going to say his name, but I work with him on several poverty boards and committees and all this kind of thing. And, you know, he went through so much discrimination in his transitioning,
mm-hmm.
You know, having the operations and all. And he went through so much, discrimination is a euphemistic word because there was actual... like hatred,
violence
against them, both physically and mental violence against them. And how do people do that in this, you know, in this day and age, and don't have an understanding, don't even try to understand, you know, people that that are in this process and choosing who and what they want to be, right? Like, I don't understand that. It's beyond my comprehension, actually.
Yeah, you and me both.
You know, and as we were speaking, I grew up as a preacher's kid, right? And and the best gift my dad gave to me was not to be like him in his judgment. And I really appreciate the fact that that's what I got, because it's allowed me to do what I do today. And if I had the same thing that I had way back then, or even before my homeless life, I couldn't be here today.
Right.
You know? And I think we need to throw judgment aside. One of the things I was going to ask you is, because of discrimination, like, do you think that and LGBTQ on the street, they go through a really, really tough time?
Yes.
And I even see it in camps, right? Mm-hmm. I see the differences. Do you find that queer people have invulnerable positions, like we're talking about? Do you find that addiction is easier to get into, or do you find that it's a easier process? Not easier process, but do you find that people turn to addictions?
Yes.
Easier than others,
it's
maybe?
It's far more prevalent.
That's what I'm... the word I'm looking for.
Yes,
I'm having a mind blank today.
Yes, you're on the exact right track. Addiction, substance use, misuse is far more prevalent in the queer community than in those that are heterosexual, cisgender. Mm.
Yes. I was going to ask that because... on the street, a lot of people turn to drugs just to escape.
Yes.
And when the issues are compounded by 10 times, I would think that would be a natural, you know, place to go.
Yeah.
I was fortunate on the street not to have any addictions. Otherwise, I certainly wouldn't be here today. I was not strong enough a person to survive addictions and be the end. So, but I know why people turn and know why people turn to addictions. And every once in a while, I feel like, you know, I applaud people who are on addictions and who are on the street, because it's so hard to survive the street without addiction. Never mind with addiction, you're still here. You're still surviving, even though you have an addiction. Wow, you're way tougher than I am, brother. You know, that kind of thing. It's kind of a weird way of looking at things, but I see it, and you know, I do some work down at with True North and DCSB, and I see issues. Every day, I see issues with queer people, and the reason why I brought up the addictions of queer people is because I see it.
Yeah.
I see it front and center every day. People coming up for food and stuff, and people high, and people who are not in the same state of mind that you and I are. It's so sad that this is the way it is. But I see firsthand, and it really drives me crazy, and it bothers me. And one of the things that is a blessing and a curse is empathy.
Yes.
Because it burns, you know, it burns inside. And it's really, really tough to see things happen because, hey, I went through some of that, and I don't want you to go through that. And so, when I hear comments and things, I feel like I have to stand up and correct it right away, and sometimes makes me not necessarily liked in the moment, but I see the vulnerable people and LGBTQ people being discriminated against when they speak ill or don't understand the situation. It really, you know, kind of bothers me. I do, you know, want to thank you for founding this, even though, you know, I've never been, but I have a cousin and I have friends who are queer people, mm-hmm. and I just see what they're going through, and why do people discriminate against, you know, wonderful people. Get to know people.
Right? You know? That's all you have to do. Get to know someone.
Yes.
Hear their story.
And Charlie, and my good friend Luca, and I, we have a good conversation about things, but he's gone through so much just mm-hmm. to transition, mm-hmm. and even with the government, right? And having them figure out how to get this person the proper funding he needs and proper help that he needs. And our government should know. They should have people in place that know this stuff, right? But they don't. Folks, we're listening to the Hope Elliott of Newfoundland's Address show today. And, of course, again, it's Friday at 11. So we're here. And my guest is Cindy Foster, the founder of Regenesis Center of Recovery. Mm-hmm. And talking about the queer situation in the city, and I think overall it's in the country and in the world in particular. But we're going to take a brief music break and come back in a couple of minutes, and we'll still be here. And that was Leah Hookinson for your listening pleasure. Debbie tries to put on local and Canadian content on the show all the time, and I applaud her for doing that every single week, unless I make a request for something else. But we are here this morning on the Hope Alley of the Fixed Address Show with Cindy Foster, the founder and executive director of Regenesis Center of Recovery. Talk about, again, a center that helps people, queer folks, if I can use that term, mm-hmm. On their way to recovery and provides services for people that need that and support. I think support is probably the best word.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that we were talking about is because I had family issue, not because way back in the day, not because I was LGBTQ or anything, that which had been horrible, my dad being a pastor and all, but because I was kind of a renegade teenager, never got into drugs or anything like that, but I got pregnant at 17, and of course coming from a Mennonite family and all that kind of stuff.
Big no-no.
And I'll never forget my dad saying, "How could you do this to me?"
Dear.
And I said, "Well, I'm not sure that was the case, but again, getting into the family issue, family issues of LGBTQ folks, and I know from talking to folks that people have been kicked out of other families because of they become LGBTQ, or I'm not sure how the proper term for that is, or transition to, or were born with it.
Usually we use the term coming out.
Coming out, of course. And families don't get it.
Right.
And they may not believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so young adults, teens, get kicked out of their homes.
Absolutely.
And can you talk a little bit about how you found that in within your organization, and speaking to kids and people?
Yeah, well, at Regenesis Center, we work primarily with adults. We don't work with youth yet. We are hoping are hoping to have a youth program in the future.
But the adults experience it.
As youth, yes. Many adults from the queer community have experienced, stigma and discrimination from within their own family.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, when they come out to their friends and family, oftentimes they're met with resistance and sometimes even outright hatred, right?
Yeah.
And that turns into, well, you're being kicked out of the house. Well, where does this young person have to go to live? And they're end up self-medicating, right?
Oh, yes.
Right? And that can turn into addiction very easily when compounded with things like, we're unable to find employment or unable to keep employment, mental health concerns and things like that. And that turns into adults who need the type of recovery program that we're offering.
Yes.
Yeah.
A totally different environment that people who are not never go through.
Coming out.
Mm-hmm. Never have to deal with that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very unfair. We use that term, unfair situation.
Yes.
And again, we just basically discussed briefly about how are you seeing, let's just talk generically, not to get you into any hot water, because that's not my job. But how are you seeing government's policies change? Are you seeing any more acceptance from all three levels of government? Are you seeing more acceptance from, say, EIA, for example, on acceptance of queer folks? Or is that something that's happening, or something that may happen in the future, or is not not on anybody's radar?
Well,
if you don't mind me asking, I mean, you don't have to answer anything about that. In generic terms,
I think that it depends on the level of government specifically, but it is on people's radars. Mm-hmm. There are some initiatives for, funding, for example, for queer services. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's not enough.
No,
there's not enough funding. There's never enough funding, but there's not enough recognition. There's not enough research being done to actually know what does need to be funded.
Yeah.
There's a great deal of room for improvement.
Yeah. How long, how many years did it take, or decades even, to do the washroom thing?
Oh my goodness, I don't even know, so long, yeah. And there's still so many places where they don't have gender-inclusive washrooms, right? And that's such a small thing to ask for.
Yeah, because, again, that just came to mind, because I know it was, I'm old enough, it was a topic of discussion for like decades almost, mm-hmm. Are we going to do this, are we not going to do it, and how is it going to work, and all that kind of stuff, and it's still... hot topic, not a hot topic, but still
it can be.
It's still a topic that needs way more discussion, and more organizations need to apply. Mm-hmm.
And public spaces too. Public like you spaces, go to a restaurant, mm-hmm. and it's still very binary: mm-hmm. men's washroom, women's washroom.
It is too. But there's so many areas that we could get into, but some of them might raise red flags and stuff, so we're not going to go. I'm very happy that you came on the show today.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for having
me. Discuss this. We have a few more minutes, but I'm drawing mind blank here. This is the first time this happened in a very long time.
It happens to me, too, from time to time.
Very long time.
Mid-sentence, I forget what I'm trying to say.
Exactly. But when you're on air, so your outreach program.
Yeah.
Talk about that. Thanks, Debbie.
Yes.
Came to the rescue.
Debbie to the rescue. Yeah. We have an outreach counselor at Regenesis Center, okay. And their job is to first have contact with people that are applying to the program and provide an assessment. Mm-hmm. And then once folks graduate from the program, we're also offering, continued mental health support.
Okay.
Right? So mm-hmm. it's not just you graduate from the program, we wash our hands and we never see you or speak to you again. Right, so we're wanting to maintain that relationship mm-hmm. with folks, and that's where our outreach program comes in.
That's really good, because I spent some time at CMHA as well, mm-hmm. And working on the homeless projects and the homeless team, on housing team, and it's good that you have the secondary backup and don't let them go without. Mm-hmm. And because what we saw so many times was, okay, when it's time for you to graduate, all of a sudden they tumble backwards.
Yes.
And I think there should be no graduation, for the mental health anyways, we at CMHA, because it just created problems, because people did not want to lose their support. That person mm-hmm. that was the case manager that saw them every week became somebody that they needed in their life. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that you run into the same kind of things, mm-hmm. where people all of a sudden start getting really nervous about things.
Yes.
And, oh my goodness, what am I going to do now? Mm-hmm. And everybody, I don't care who you are, how strong you are, you need somebody to back you up.
Absolutely.
To have your back, right? And especially when people are vulnerable, I've seen it so many times that there's so much fear, mm-hmm. That it changes them almost, and people that were doing exceptionally well in the program, all of a sudden just boom, created a they just started tumbling, if I can use that term, and falling and slipping, I'm so glad that in your case that you have that follow-up support.
Absolutely.
Because people can't have a whole lot of difficulty doing it on their own, unless they're exceptional exceptional people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to do that. And I was a part of the At Home Say Swap program myself. I was, my story, I came out of the Salvation Army during the last 14 months of my homeless. I was on the streets 14 months in psych ward for a month, and then 14 months in the Salvation Army. Mm-hmm. And then after 2.5 years, I became a case manager in the At Home Say Swap program.
Wow.
The first lived experience case manager in the country.
Wow.
And but I saw, as that case manager, I had that deeper understanding about where people were coming from.
Yeah.
And actually, I developed a better relationship with a lot of the case managers because they knew some of my clients were people I knew from Salvation Army.
Oh, wow.
So it became this is good, right? But I saw the same fear in people when we started lessening the visits and going from, say, 2 days a week to one day a week to mm-hmm. once every 2 weeks, and then people started panicking
mm-hmm.
that we were going to leave them alone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... And it's so tough, and you know, and being in housing after you've been on the streets, you think it'd be an easy transition, but it's one of the hardest transitions. Because we used to house, we were supposed to only house people 4 times.
Okay.
Sometimes you house them 8 and 9 times until they got it right
mm-hmm.
and they became secure.
Mm-hmm.
Because they always bring in their friends, they trash apartments, or they have domestic disputes and all that kind of stuff. And without supports, some of those people would back on the street and they'd be dead.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And I know because some of the addictions that were happening, they'd been dead. And we actually lost a few people. So I know that follow-up support is really important. And I appreciate that you do that because some organizations, well, most organizations don't do that. But some. And I have to credit the ones that do.
Absolutely.
You know, like West Central Women's is a really good organization.
Such a good organization.
Lori's a really good friend of mine.
Oh.
And we have our 3 a.m. conversation and stuff like this on Messenger, right? But they, they offer a different way of looking at and doing
certainly.
Things, right?
Yeah.
Because they transition people from homelessness into and give them an empower. And empowerment is one of the biggest words, right?
Absolutely.
And I know that you do that.
Well,
you
yes.
know, that's the biggest word, besides empathy. Empowerment is one of the biggest words in the English language because you do not move forward unless you're empowered to do so.
100%.
Right? Because my time on the streets, I couldn't speak like I'm doing now until about 6 years later mm-hmm. again. And that was just... big SMB sales guy. I could speak to anything and anybody, right? I lost it all, right? And I could not, until I gained all that confidence back and became empowered to do so, I couldn't do it. And so what you do is empowering, and that means a lot because that's the only way people,
move forward,
right?
Absolutely.
And I had to bring up Lori and West Central because they do amazing
work.
Amazing work, mm-hmm. too. And she's, her and I kind of were a little bit of a renegade type. You know, and we don't necessarily follow the rules. And she's not afraid to speak out against the government. And it has hurt her, too, as you said.
Uh-huh. Right? It can happen.
It can happen. But are there... last words you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
Well, I really wanted to just say thank you to you for your interest in Regenesis Center mm-hmm. and your commitment to the work that you do. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, the amount of lives that you've changed we couldn't even begin to put a number on it, right? And touched. And being able to have a moment here to talk about the needs mm-hmm. of the queer community and you being able to share your experiences, you know,
thank you.
Is so helpful.
And I just, when I do my training, I do a lot of training. And one of the things I like to, and this is particularly important here, I end my session with acknowledgement. And this story, I was in St. John's with the Canadian Alliance on Homelessness. I was their peer engagement specialist and going to organization and talking about why you need me in your organization, right? To, mm-hmm. And lending my experiences with CMHA and the At Home Say Swap program as to why it's important that people live the experience. And that was my job. The next day, driving to the airport, I mean, it was, first of all, it was the most traumatic day and the most exhilarating day of my life, I think, because for a 7-hour training session, I lost my entire PowerPoint.
Oh, dear. And, oh, no.
The morning of.
Oh, no.
Yes. And so I made hurriedly made notes on the agenda between the 12 lines of the agenda. And guess what? We ran out of time.
No. Look at how that worked
and
out.
And that was so empowering for me because after making it through a day like that, I can do anything.
Right.
And that just springboarded me to all kinds of other things, right? And today I've done 700 talks and trainings and stuff. But the point is this. There's so much I could say about that particular day. But the next day when the organizer came and picked me up and to drive me to the airport, he gave me a gift bag. Like, you know, they usually do the swag bagger. Mm-hmm. So I pulled out a painting of a seaside village by their most famous artist in St. John's. And it's such a beautiful picture, still hanging on my wall today. I pulled out a big box of gourmet chocolates for their most famous chocolatier. And I'm diabetic, but I ate it at the whole thing at the airport before my plane left. And in Montreal on the stopover. I got a bottle of Newfie Screech because it's all things Newfie,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
So I had them send that to me. And then I pulled out the card, and it still chokes me up. And there were three words on the cover and three words on the inside. And the cover, I opened it up, and it's plain old white card with black lettering, and it said, "What you did." And I opened it up, and it said, "Mattered a lot."
Oh.
Yeah. And given the day I had, you know, I just broke down and cried, and I couldn't stop crying until I got to you.
Oh, dear.
But I want to leave that with you.
Thank you.
And leave that gift with you because you do what is needed for this community. And there's you fill the gap in such a big way, and I really appreciate that. And I just want to thank you for it, and take to heart that somebody knows outside of your community really, really gets it.
Oh, that's and, so kind. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. And folks, coming to the end of this show, and I feel that. Next week, we're going to have another person on with lived experience who actually came through the studio to her. You know, a lot of people listen to the show, and then, you know, they say, "I have something to say."
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I feel strongly about the individual we're going to have on next week, a person with lived experience and has gone through trials because of his indigenousness as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's one of the, it's so difficult for people of indigenous culture, ethnicity, to make it off the street.
Mm-hmm.
Because even so, in our sector, there's still that thing.
Yes.
There is still that thing, and it shouldn't be, but there's still that thing that they are secondary.
Yes.
It happens. Oh, I see it. Even with the best intentions, people let that judgment get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
I see it all the time. And, you know, and it's so difficult to grasp because I see it every day down at the library, too. But so we're going to have a person on who's going to talk about his lived experience of homelessness, and we're going to deal with that particular issue. I think it'll be a powerful show again. But thank you so much, Cindy, for coming on. I'm glad we could get you on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And again, let's stay in contact, and I want to talk to you about Symposium 3.
Absolutely.
And lend your support to you know, have you speak at the events. And again, I've not broached it as much as I should, and that's my fault, but this year I really want to, and I think I want you to be part of it.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I would love to.
Thanks, and folks, come back next week, and we'll have another great show for you. Take care, and be kind. If you're at Tim's, you're at Robin's, if you're at Starbucks, buy a second one. Take care.
Clustered dumbly out of reach. which I would not sing for me.
The Wrench is the Winnipeg Repair, Education, and Cycling Hub. Since 2010, The Wrench has used discarded bike parts collected from Winnipeg's 4R sites to educate our community in bike mechanics and keep us all on our bikes through access to bikes and bike repair. We work with dozens of schools throughout Winnipeg to offer Earn a Bike, an 8-week program for teens to learn to rebuild a bike from scratch. and take it home with them at the end of program completion. Are you a teacher who wants to bring EarnaBike to your school? Get in touch. Check out thewrench.ca and look for EarnaBike. We can't wait to work with you.